In a world of rugged individualism, we sometimes forget that the me needs a we to thrive. Welcome to A Walk Within, a show where we visit a short story from around the world and revisit life experiences invoked by it to explore the parallels between the two and find newer meanings. I'm Anoop, and in today's episode, we will explore a short story, The Adamant Door, from the Starlight Wonder Book by Henry Beston, and a great source of motivation, fulfillment, and happiness, a sense of belonging. Before we start, I want to thank all the listeners for their continuous support of the show. Please consider sharing this with your friends, families, and co-workers. Your recommendation is greatly appreciated. As always, let's start with the story once we are back. This is a heavily edited version of the story. I would highly encourage you to read the full story on Project Gutenberg, the link to which can be found in the show notes. Once upon a time, on a fine spring morning, a country lad named Hugh took his fish pole from a corner and went to try his luck in a brook beside the road. Now it fortuned that as he stood upon the grassy bank, casting about in the broad shallows of the stream, the boy heard the mighty sound of many men singing together, and presently he beheld a regiment of soldiers on the march. And now the regiment came to a halt and broke ranks beside the brook. With shouts and cries, the young soldiers hurried to the water, opened their coats at the throat, and washed the dust from their sunburned faces. The sergeants gathered and gossiped by themselves, and here and there, a man helped a comrade with his pack. How splendid it must be to be a soldier, thought Hugh as he gazed upon the merry company. And hurrying home to his mother as fast as his legs could carry him, he begged so eagerly for the permission to enlist that at length he won her consent and followed the marching men. And now the lad Hugh himself was a soldier of the realm, and soon he knew what it was to lie upon the ground and shiver in a blanket, and to watch the rolling stars, and to hear the night winds cry. Now it chanced that there was another young soldier of Hugh's age enlisted in the company. With this lad, whose name was Jocelyn, Hugh presently became the best of friends. This Jocelyn was a mountaineer and was slender and yellow-haired, whilst Hugh was a lad of the plain and was sturdy of frame and dark. And because these two lads were the youngest of the company and were loyal friends, they marched down the highway side by side and shared together the good and ill of life. Now it came to pass upon a summer's night, as the soldiers lay encamped in the field by the royal city, that the great bell of the king's palace broke the quiet of the stars with a loud and unending clangor of alarm. All at once, with a thunder of hoofs, a messenger from the city came spurring in with the news that the war was at hand, and that the regiment must break camp on the instant and speed to the borders of the realm. Left, right, and the soldiers were marching to the wars. Soon the villages and the fields grew rare. A silence fell upon the land, and the regiment found itself at the edge of a vast and lonely moor. Regiments without number were there encamped, and their fires gleamed at night like a thousand scattered stars. Leagues away, on barren hills rising to the north, were to be seen the fires of the foe. And now it was the morn of the battle. The young comrades marched into battle side by side. They fought as in a dream, scarce knowing what they did. At the storming of a grassy hillock of the moor, Hugh was taken prisoner by the soldiers of the enemy in black and white. but was bravely rescued by Jocelyn, who fought his way undaunted to his side. The day waned. A tide of dark and threatening cloud rose over the horizon to the east, and a cold wind rode before it, bringing rain. All at once, a wild and terrible storm burst over the battle on the moor. In the dark of the storm and the tumult of the fray, the boy Hugh became separated from his comrades and suddenly found himself out of the battle and wandering quite alone. Night was rushing on. The din of the combat was muffled in the roaring of the rain, and the young soldier scarce knew where to go. Now it was his duty to return to the battle, seek out his comrades, and fight beside them to the end. Alas, so weary and shaken was the soldier lad that he made no effort to return to his hard-pressed friends, but fled away from the battle through the dark. Presently, the all but roofless ruin of a shepherd's hut appeared ahead, and Hugh took refuge within it from the battle and the storm. All night long, he lay there on the stones of the floor, sunken in a shivering sleep. But the dawn woke him at last, and he crept to a window to look forth upon the moor. All was still. The battle was lost. Suddenly, the runaway soldier heard the beat of a distant drum, and gazing through a cranny of the ruined house, beheld a number of prisoners marching by forlorn. And then, trudging wearily on, appeared the good comrades whom he had deserted in their need, and Jocelyn walked among them bareheaded, with his arms tied behind him at the wrist. And now the dark waters of sorrow and shame welled up in the heart of the runaway soldier, and he wept bitterly that he had failed to return into the fray. He would have leaped from the house and taken his place with his comrades, save that he could not bear that they should know of his flight. He fled from the hut in the dead of the night and made escape across the moor and fled to a village lying at the foot of a hill crowned with a ruined tower, and there took service in the harvest fields. As for Jocelyn and his comrades, they were marched into the enemy's country, thrust into dungeons and held for ransom, one and all. One noontide, as Hugh rested with the fellow laborers in the greenwood shade, he asked them of the ruined castle on the hill.
"Yon castle was built centuries ago by an old knight who was known throughout the land as a magician. A treasure lies hid within, but none dare seek it. For those who do,
never come back.
Once there was a brave adventurer who went to seek the treasure. We watched him climb the hill, we saw him enter the castle, and all at once we heard
a terrible yell.
And he never come back.
Bless us, and what do you suppose it is that guards the treasure?"
"Well, if you ask me, I'll tell you. It's a Trigorgon."
"A Trigorgon? And pray, sir, what is a Trigorgon?"
"A Trigorgon is a creature that has only three legs. It's triangular and flattish, the one leg being at the front under the long neck, the two legs riding behind. Short, thick, elephant-like legs, body like a turtle, double rows of teeth, violent disposition. I've read of it in a book."
"Bother your book. The Trigorgon you describe, my good sir, is quite impossible. A Trigorgon has its two legs in front and one leg behind. A neck has got to have shoulders to rest on, hasn't it? You see, young man, Trigorgon uses its one hind leg to push itself ahead at a frightful speed. I know. Because the seventh son of a seventh son's great-grandmother told me."
"Bother your seventh son's great-grandmother. Now my book had large prints and most wonderful pictures."
"Psh!
Tush for you and your seventh son of a seventh son's great-grandmother."
My friends, why quarrel over this absurd Trigorgon? You're both wrong. The castle is haunted by a tithe, a terribly dangerous tithe. All over the land they say it's a tithe."
"Who say?"
they say.
Father they and all they say. It's a Trigorgon.
It's a tithe.
A treasure, said Hugh to himself. Ah, if I could but find it, I would ransom Jocelyn and the comrades. And with an uneasy heart, he thought of the Trigorgon, the tithe, the winged bogus, the snarling whisker roarer, the mistophant, the vrish. How terrible it would be to meet creatures so awful that no human being had dared to see them. But Jocelyn and the comrades, whom he had failed in their hours of peril on the moor, what of them? They were prisoners in the land of the foe. With the treasure of the castle, he could ransom them. Was he to fail them again? All at once, the runaway young soldier threw back his shoulders bravely and lifted his eyes to the sky. He would seek the treasure on the morrow's morn. Before you wonder what happened next, let's talk about why the village boy wanted to join the army, or how an inexperienced rookie soldier, despite being slender, found the courage to fight for his comrades. And lastly, why a person who deserted his regiment and ran for his life now wants to face an unknown monster just so he can get back to his friends. Abraham Maslow, in his 1943 paper, A Theory of Human Motivation, presented a concept, Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. It is a motivational theory in psychology comprising a five-tier model of human needs. The original hierarchy of needs has a five-stage model. Physiological needs, like food, shelter, and clothing. Safety needs, like job security. Love and belongingness needs. Here, belongingness refers to a human emotional need for interpersonal relationships, affiliating, connectedness, and being part of a group. Then comes esteem needs, and lastly, self-actualization needs. Let's focus on belonging. What is belonging? A sense of belonging entails more than just getting to know other people. It focuses on getting acceptance, attention, and support from group members while also delivering the same attention to other members. These groups include families, friends, workplace, and all sorts of communities, be it offline or online. To truly feel a sense of belonging, you must feel unity and a common sense of character with and among members of your group. And this is key. True belonging requires acceptance and contribution of one's authentic self and not a mere participation. But why do we have this need? And why should we care about it? Humans are a species whose design was established more than 10,000 years ago. We are still a Stone Age brain in a modern environment. Our evolution took place in tight-knit tribes. We slept, ate, and worked together. The need to belong helped unite us to survive predators, scarcity, and disasters. Being alone meant death. While modern society has split us into smaller, isolated units, our biology still desperately craves togetherness. This craving was the reason that Hugh from the story wanted to join army, despite its challenges, and also was the main motivation for his willingness to face the monster. A sense of belonging is essential for happiness, life satisfaction, mental and physical health, and even lifespan. A recent MIT study found that we crave interaction in the same region of our brains where we crave food. And according to another, we experience social exclusion in the same part of our brain as we do physical pain. As researcher Susan Pinker, the famous author of the book The Village Effect, puts it, in-person friendship create a biological force field against disease and decline. According to a Harvard study, which is one of the world's longest studies of adult life, having started in 1938 during the Great Depression, the quality of your connections is the most important predictor of lifetime happiness, health, and longevity. This is independent of money, social status, or genes. Robert Waldinger, a psychiatrist and a professor at Harvard Medical School, said, "Our study has shown that the people who fared the best were the people who leaned into relationships with family, with friends, with community." On another side, a University of Michigan study discovered that a loss of sense of belonging is a powerful predictor of depression in adults. In fact, it is more powerful predictor than loneliness or a lack of social support. Isolation dramatically increases anxiety. We all require belonging in some forms, including introverts and those with extreme social anxiety. Abraham Maslow suggested that the need to belong was the major source of human motivation. As in the story we saw, an unqualified and daring rescue of Hugh and Jocelyn. Now the question comes, how can we create a sense of belonging? Being surrounded by other human beings doesn't guarantee a sense of belonging. Belonging is actually about recognizing oneself as a member of a community and the higher quality interactions that come with it. It is our interactions throughout the time that help us grow into full, true human beings. To build a sense of belonging requires active effort and practice. Let's talk about some of the ways. According to some experts, trust is built when you are authentic and perceived as competent. You can create the conditions for belonging when you are open and vulnerable, as well as when you are empathetic toward others. We all enjoy assisting others, but are hesitant to seek help in order to avoid appearing weak. The act of asking is an invitation to grow together, and it deepens the bonds and interactions between people. Make frequent contributions, because this is where the growth takes place. Your self-confidence and esteem rise when you believe your efforts are valued. It is not a sign that you don't belong if you are emotionally sensitive. Make an effort to avoid blaming yourself or others. Looking for ways you are similar to others rather than focusing on how you are different is one strategy to work on boosting your sense of belonging. Lastly, in the current COVID reality, listening is a new superpower. Janine Stewart says, "If we can't create belonging through physical closeness in the ways we used to, we can and must think about how we might create that through focused attention and listening." In the end, belonging is a profound nourishment for the body, mind, and soul. Investing in it will bring happiness, health, and deep fulfillment. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I will be releasing the rest of the story as a bonus episode in the coming weeks. The link to the story, some studies referred today, and a couple of wonderful reads on sense of belonging is available in the show notes. Once again, I want to thank you for continuing to support the show. Till next time, stay as awesome as you are.